Hello there, AP Government. Welcome. Let's go through this review. The topic 5.1, the Bill of Rights. So first off, remember the Bill of Rights is going to be all about creating a system or some protections that limits the government. All right. The whole idea and why the anti-federalists had such a problem with the Constitution and the new federal government was there was no listings of those protections in the Constitution. And so that's what drove them to say, hey, well, you gotta add these things. And so the Bill of Rights was created, and it just lists the protections that we have from the government. So the First Amendment, remember, protects our freedom of speech, religion, press, assembly, and petition. The Second Amendment is the right to bear arms. The Third Amendment is no quartering of troops. Fourth Amendment is no unlawful search and seizure. Fifth Amendment, we don't have to incriminate ourselves. Sixth Amendment is fair trial. Seventh Amendment is the same trial stuff applied to the civil side. The Eighth Amendment is no cruel and unusual punishment. And so the courts over the years has to interpret when something is violating our free speech or our free religion or whatever it might be. All right. And so that's what those two things are there. It says protects individual liberties and rights. And so we just, you know, those, we're going to talk about each one in a little more detail in just a few minutes. But the interpretation by the courts, that's a key thing, because the courts, they're the ones that have to deal with this. You know, an agency, the legislative branch, they create a policy and then they go out there and enforce it. Well, then it gets questioned because, well, is that legal under the First Amendment? Is that a violation of people's rights under the Fourth Amendment, whatever it might be? And the courts will have to look at it and address that and decide, yeah, that's a violation of the Fifth Amendment or whatever amendment we're talking about. All right, topic 5.2 is religion. So the First Amendment, freedom of religion, there are two clauses that you got to know. And this goes for this test, for the multiple choice. It also gets into the FRQs. Be sure, and there's no FRQs on the test, but there is an FRQ that for your written final. So anyways, the Establishment Clause is the first one. And this is the one that says the government can't create a religion. All right. And so that's the main takeaway from that. There's a court case that you got to know, Engle versus Vital. This is the prayer in school case. For this case, just know that the schools would lead prayer pretty much every class period or every day, whatever, whether it's elementary or high school or whatever it might be. But basically, there was teacher-led prayer. And parents are going to challenge this. And the courts are going to have to interpret, is this school prayer in violation of the First Amendment? And they interpreted it to be in violation of the Establishment Clause, because the Establishment Clause says the government's not going to create a state-sponsored religion. Well, here's a school, state-sponsored, making kids pray. So that's where you get the separation of church and state from a court interpretation. Free Exercise Clause, this is the one that allows us to kind of worship how we want to for the most part. Wisconsin versus Yoder is the case you got to know. And in this case, the Amish wanted to pull their kids out of school after eighth grade, around 14. The Wisconsin state law said, no, you got to wait till they're 16 to pull kids out. And so the Amish are going to take that to court about their right to pull their kids out was in violation of their free exercise. And once again, just to reiterate from 5.1, the courts had to interpret, is this state law that says kids have to be in school until 16 in violation of the Amish's right to worship how they want to and pull their kids out? Now, I don't know the reasoning behind wanting to pull their kids out of school at that time. I'm not sure. Okay. But the courts did rule in favor of the Amish to say that the Wisconsin state law was in violation of their free exercise. All right, 5.3, the First Amendment, freedom of speech. So we got symbolic speech, and I think we all understand this. Symbolic speech is beyond our spoken words. So we can say and criticize and do things and say things that's covered under free speech. Okay. We'll get into some of the questions about the spoken word in just a few minutes. But the first thing is symbolic speech. And so, does other things that we do get protected under free, under the umbrella of freedom of speech. And so symbolic speech. So think some of the protests that are out there, people wearing shirts, people, you know, wearing armbands, ribbons, things like that, or some of the other things that get done in protest, burning a flag, burning pictures of individuals that you're not happy with. All those things are going to fall under symbolic speech as well. So the courts have kind of created the whole symbolic speech thing out of the freedom of speech. So, and they have applied the freedom of speech to a whole lot of areas of our life. Okay. And just, I think we've said this, but just as a reminder, the freedom of speech protects you from the government. There can always be societal consequences to the stuff that you do and say. The case you got to know is Tinker versus Des Moines. And in this case, the Tinkers were some students. They were three of them. They wore black armbands to protest the Vietnam War. They got suspended for violating the learning environment or disturbing it or something like that. I don't know. And the courts will get this. Now, keep in mind, going back to Unit 3, the courts weren't all concerned. Oh, these kids were suspended. We better hear this case right now so we can get them out of their suspension possibly. The kids served their suspension. This was more principal type of thing. But the courts get it, and they rule in favor of the kids, and they're going to cite symbolic free speech. All right. And we've talked about some of the other cases that are out there, Texas versus Johnson and stuff like that, where symbolic speech has been extended as well. All right. The time, place, and manner regulations. So the court has ruled that there are some restrictions that can be placed on free speech, you know. And this gets into that whole thing where if you run into a theater and yell fire or something like that, that's probably not going to hold up as well. I was exercising free speech. Well, no, you weren't. You were trying to do something that was going to cause chaos, panic, and things like that. So the whole time, place, and manner regulations, that's all that's getting at, is that the courts have recognized and realized, yes, free speech is an important component of our society, and you need to be able to have it. But there are sometimes some places and some manners where you can't say whatever you want to. All right. Obscene and offensive communication. This goes back to some of those things that could be seen as offensive. Think of like dirty magazines and things like that. Offensive communication. If you I'm going to let your mind use whatever, what can be offensive. Okay. So I don't want to go into too much detail here. But there are restrictions placed, on that stuff. Okay. Defamation. So that's that libel and slander piece. Remember, defamation is where you're kind of questioning someone's character. Libel is the written version. Slander is the spoken version. And we've said this before, that libel is easier to prove because it's in writing versus slander, which is spoken. However, libel is difficult to prove for people because you had to be able to prove that the person that wrote it was doing it with malice. And that comes from a couple court cases in the 70s and 80s. Clear and present danger, Schenck versus the U.S. So free speech can be limited if you present a clear and present danger in times of national security, times of war, things like that. All right. In the Schenck case, Schenck was the higher up in the Socialist Party of America. And him and his people were protesting the World War I draft, saying it violated the 13th Amendment and the no involuntary servitude piece of that. And he gets arrested. He is charged and convicted. He's going to appeal, saying, hey, I have free speech. I can say what I want to. And the court gets it, and they don't agree with him. They say that you presented a clear and present danger. And so that's where this doctrine comes from, where this idea comes from, is that your free speech can be limited. You know, you don't have the blank check to say whatever you want to. And if the government can prove and show that, yes, you present this clear and present danger, then at this point, it would be up to the courts to decide, you know, what is that? But you can have your free speech restricted there. All right, 5.4, the First Amendment, freedom of press. So prior restraint is this idea that the government is going to have the ability to censor what you say. Okay. Let me take a step back. The press, let's do this first. The press needs to have the ability to write what they want to. They really got to have the freedom to get out there and tell stories and criticize our government, because our government is not above us, not above our press. And we need to know, we need to have an idea of when they're doing something wrong. And so the press has to have the freedom and the ability to write those stories. Now, our press today, I don't want to get into all the stuff, but it's, I don't know that it does this so much. It feels like it's so left or right. Anyways, prior restraint is government actions that prevent the publication of stuff. All right. And so that's kind of where we're at with that. So the government might try and stop, might try and censor something. They're not supposed to do that. And the case New York Times versus U.S. is the one that kind of confirms this. So remember, this was the Pentagon Papers, the Washington Times, and a couple of other papers were wanting to write a story based around the Pentagon Papers, which detailed America's time in Vietnam. And the Nixon administration was like, no, you can't do that. That's going to hurt national security. And so it goes to the court. The Supreme Court gets it eventually. They rule in favor of the papers, saying, well, you know, this is beyond that level. There is no national security to affect, because this is stuff that has already happened. It's not going to affect any of the agents, any of the military, anything like that. So they allowed them to do that. So that's a win for the press, is New York Times versus the U.S. All right, I'm going to take a quick break and be right back. All right, finally moving away from the First Amendment, we get into the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms. And I think everybody has an understanding of the Second Amendment. It is the right to bear arms. I'm going to hold off on the Chicago versus McDonald case because we talk about it at 5.7. So we'll come back to that in just a minute. It is a required case, and it could fit in both these places. So we'll just talk about it at once in just a minute. But the right to bear arms, pretty simple. The government's not supposed to be able to take that away. All right, 5.6, amendments balancing individual freedom with public order and safety. And so we have talked about this, and hopefully you kind of saw a trend in some of the questions from the civil liberties questions that you worked on and the civil rights questions that you worked on. But the one of the big things that the government and really any entity, whether it be the government, our school, whatever, has to wrestle with when they are making laws and policies and rules and all that kind of stuff is our individual freedom versus everybody else's. Okay. So, and we've said this about the school before. Let's say they were to put in metal detectors and you could be subjected to searches to enter the building to try and keep the school safe. Now, there's no talk of that. There's no discussion of that. That's not something that I don't think we're going to have. The school I graduated from, where my nieces go and my sister works at, they have metal detectors they got to go through, which is crazy because it's a small little nothing town in north central Florida. But they've decided to do that. So the question becomes, is it worth my individual freedom to go through and submit to this search that in theory does violate my Fourth Amendment right? Okay, to make sure that the entire school is being safe. The airlines going through TSA and the security, and you're subject to some searches there. They go through your stuff. You know, what's your reasoning? Well, we're trying to keep the airlines and the plane safe and all that kind of stuff. Okay, I'll give up my individual liberty for that. And so that's the idea that we're talking about here with 5.6. Balancing individual freedom. How much freedom should I have? How much individual stuff should I get? And is mine worth the public? Okay. Think, and I don't want to get into too much with the issue of the pandemic and the mask and things like that, but think about how many people, you know, you saw videos of people not wanting to wear their masks and things like that, and claiming individual freedoms and whatnot. And but the idea is true. You know, they should have that choice. Do they want to wear their mask or not? But at the same time, is it worth you not wearing your mask when you could be keeping everybody safe? And so that's the question they have to ask. So cruel and unusual punishment, the Eighth Amendment and the death penalty. So when the death penalty is given, you're really, truly weighing someone's individual freedom, someone's individual natural rights with the rest of society. Okay. And I sometimes joke in class that I'm a death penalty supporter and like, let's get it done. And I am for some of the most heinous crimes. I think there are people that don't deserve to be here. But the government's really got to weigh this decision. It's not something that's just given flippantly and without careful consideration. At least I hope it's not. When the government decides that something that you have done is worth your life, you know, that's really weighing here. Is it worth you versus society? And so that's what that's getting at. The Second and Fourth Amendment. So the Second Amendment, your right to bear arms, gets applied here. The Fourth Amendment, we've talked about that with the metal detectors, the searches. So hopefully you have an idea here. And I'm not going to spend more time dwelling on this. But this is a big one, you know. And once again, it's something that almost every entity that is enforcing any kind of rules or policies or anything like that really has to weigh. Is this going to be invasive to people's civil liberties? Is it going to be invasive to their individual freedoms? And is it okay for us to tread on that in order to be sure that people have that the greater good, the people are safe? So just something to ponder on, you know, not just now, but you know, as you move through your life. It's not that deep, I guess. But anyways, all right. 5.7, selective incorporation. So this is pretty, I don't want to say it's simple, but all this means is that the states have to apply the Bill of Rights. So when it first was created, the states really were like, you know, the Bill of Rights, that's a deal with the federal government and the citizens. It's not really a deal with us and the citizens. And so they would pick and choose when they decided to enforce things. Some cities would enforce parts of the Bill of Rights. Others would not. Once again, that whole idea that, hey, this is not us. This is not something that applies to us. And, you know, there's a couple of court cases. 1833, the Supreme Court kind of ruled in favor of the cities and states. And they said that, eminent domain was not a thing, basically, for the city, because they had taken somebody's port, basically. Then in 1925, in New York, Gitler versus New York, the Supreme Court is going to reverse. And they're going to say, yes, the states have to apply the Bill of Rights to their laws and to their policies. And so now, today, you're pretty much not going to run across a situation where your civil liberties are going to be violated by a city or state and them claiming that, well, we didn't have to enforce that. All right. Chicago versus McDonald is an example of that. That is where Chicago had restrictive gun laws in place and McDonald wanted to have his gun. Once again, not Ronald McDonald, the clown from the hamburger people, but an actual person named McDonald. And the courts are going to rule in favor of him and say, yes, states, cities, Chicago specifically here, the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment applies to you. Your gun laws are too restrictive in violating this person's Second Amendment rights. 5.8, the amendments due process and the rights of the accused. So we talked about this at length, I think, at least I hope we did. The 14th Amendment has two clauses that you really got to know. Due process is one and equal protection is the other. So due process is just all the rights you have as an accused person. So from the time you're a suspect and the police want to search you, through your questioning, through your trial, through your incarceration, you have due process. And so that's what we're going to go through now is those amendments. So the Fourth Amendment protects you from no unlawful search and seizure. I think we know this. There is only three ways the police, the authorities can search you: a warrant, probable cause, or your permission. Okay, and let's get into some of the specifics here. The cell phone searches, we've said this in class, the police cannot make you open up your phone. They should not be able to. They should have to get a warrant. I mean, they can always ask you, and you can always submit to that request if you'd like to. But in theory, if they want to search your phone, they have to get a warrant. And, you know, this is something that's been an issue for a while. I don't know if y'all remember It's been several years ago, but I want to think there was a shooter in Las Vegas, and they were tr the police and the FBI were trying to get into his phone. I think he had was killed or committed suicide. I should have brought this up because I don't remember the details, and I'm just doing it off the top of my head. But what I do remember is that they wanted to get into his phone, and they didn't have the password. And Apple was like, "Well, we're not going to do that. We're not going to get in to that phone because we don't want to open up this whole can of worms where the police, the FBI, can come in and request to break into someone's phone, basically." And so it ties back into that Fourth Amendment stuff. You can look at the case, I'm sure. And I should have brought it up because I don't remember everything about it. The exclusionary rule, this comes from Matt versus Ohio, and this is just the fact that the illegally obtained evidence that the police get from you is not going to be able to be used against you in court. Now, once again, like I said in class, this is not something that the judge is going to be like, "Well, you know what? That's illegally obtained." Your lawyer is going to have to question it and get it kicked out, basically. But it is something that can happen. And once again, that comes from Matt versus Ohio. Not a required case, but they found something in Matt's house when they illegally searched it, looking for an escaped convict. They found drugs. They arrested her. And the court eventually kicked it out because why were you there? The Fifth Amendment. This is the one that keeps you from incriminating yourself. You do not have to talk to the police. You don't have to talk at your trial. And so that is the basis of that. The Miranda rights, that right to remain silent, that comes from a case where Miranda confessed to his crime, was convicted based on that confession, and then appeal said, "I didn't know I didn't have to talk to the police." And so we got a second trial. Now he still found guilty, so he obviously did it. But you do get your rights read to you nowadays. Now, once again, and I keep on saying that, but we've said this in class, and that's all I'm alluding to. It's not like the movies, it's not like the TV shows where a failure to read you your rights is going to be a get out of jail free card. Yeah, they don't have to do it as they're putting the handcuffs on you. They can do it in booking. They can do it after you've been booked. They can do it after you've been sitting in prison for 2 or 3 weeks. Okay? It doesn't have to happen until really they want to question you. So just keep that in mind. I was listening to a podcast recently about there was a mass, like this was in the 60s. Someone had gone in and killed like 8 nursing students. Okay. And the police held off on questioning him for 3 weeks. They arrested him, put him in jail, said, "Hey, this is what you're being charged with." Okay. But they didn't question him until they got a whole bunch of little other pieces. They pretty much knew he did it. There's an eyewitness, but they wanted to do everything by the book to be sure that this person was found guilty. Okay. And so they held off on question, and they didn't have to read the rights until they started to question them. So just keep that in mind. Hopefully no one is ever in that situation. All right, the 14th Amendment. We said earlier that it deals with the Due Process Clause, and then the Equal Protection Clause. We'll get to in just a second. But in this case, we're talking about the states versus the federal government. And typically, the Fifth Amendment is going to be kind of on the federal level, and the 14th then forces the states to apply those same rights to you. So that's all that's getting at. And then the Sixth Amendment, the Giddings versus Wainwright. The Sixth Amendment, this is the one that gives you a fair trial and all the things that come with it. And Giddings versus Wainwright, this is the one that made it to where everybody gets a lawyer, not just those convicted of charged with a felony. Anybody can get one. Excuse me. Okay, let's take our last break, and I'll be right back after this. All right, welcome back. Let's wrap this thing up with the last couple of sections here. So 5.9, still a few more things with due process. This one is going to be specifically the right to privacy. So citizens have a reasonable expectation of privacy, although not stated in the Constitution. So this is a key thing to keep in mind here. There's no mention of that word in the Constitution. However, the courts have kind of taken it and interpreted it from the Fourth Amendment and the no unlawful search and seizure. They've also used the 14th Amendment here. To do and create this whole right to privacy thing. All right. And so we have that reasonable expectation. A couple of court cases there, Griswold versus Connecticut. I mentioned this in class when we talked about something. I can't remember now. But this was a case where contraceptives and birth control was illegal. And a Connecticut doctor had prescribed them to a married couple. They got caught and the doctor was arrested. Okay. And so it gets appealed in the courts. Like, yeah, people have this right. And this is where it kind of gets created a little bit about the right to privacy, is that case where they said, you know, people doing stuff, whatever it is they're doing in their house, have a right to that privacy. Roe versus Wade was the abortion case. And I think most people are familiar with this because it's been overturned so recently. But at the time, one of the things people cited, the court cited, was that people, women, have a reasonable right to privacy with what happens here. And so that's kind of what they used to base that decision on. Now, it's been overturned. Dobbs versus Mississippi is what overturned it. And they really questioned that whole right to privacy thing. In it. And this is where they turned over the abortion stuff to the states. All right, 5.10, social movements and equal protection. So, letter from a Birmingham jail. In the civil rights questions that you answered, the letter from a Birmingham jail was included in there. There was a link to it, so you could have skimmed through it. But the big thing here was that Martin Luther King Jr. wrote this from jail, obviously. It's from a Birmingham jail. Him and his followers, his people, have been practicing civil disobedience, where you purposely don't follow a law that you feel is unfair and unjust. Okay? He got arrested for it. He's writing this letter directed at some of the pastors in Birmingham, specifically some of the white pastors who are just standing by. You got to let this happen. And the whole idea here is that, did I say idea? I think it's idea. Was or is that this unjust law, okay, it's being applied to African Americans and it's unjust for that. But it's you're just sitting here. You're not doing anything. You're not saying anything. And any unjust law is an unjust law for everybody, not just for the specific group that it might be targeting. And so that's what he's getting at there. Brown versus Board of Education. I think everybody's pretty familiar with this. Brown versus Board is the one that desegregated schools. Integrated schools, however you want to say it, based on the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Once again, you got to know those clauses of the 14th Amendment, Due Process Clause and Equal Protection. I'm not going to go through all the details of the court case because we spent some time in class on that. But once again, this is the one that said separate but equal is in violation of the 14th Amendment. Now it's just the National Organization for Women, pro-life versus pro-choice. I don't really see any questions about this, but it's just that whole equal protection idea. Tied to this, and it's in our standards. That's why it's in the study guide. But I don't remember seeing a test question on pro-life versus pro-choice. 5.11, government responses to social movements. So one of the big ideas behind civil rights is the government trying to protect. And so a lot of these things were created to try and protect the different movements. Civil Rights Act, we've talked about before in class, 1964 was created, and it was supposed to stem discrimination based on race, sex, and religion. That's the big thing that it does. It didn't do enough for voting, so the Voting Rights Act was created, and this is going to try and stop discrimination based on race, sex, religion when it comes to voting. So registration, actually going to the polls, and things like that. The 19th Amendment gave women the right to vote. Title IX is an amendment to the Education Act part of the Civil Rights Act, and it was created in 1972, and it's trying to create a fair school environment for everybody, okay? And then Obergefell versus Hodges, this is the one that legalized same-sex marriages back in 2014-15, so fairly recently. 5.12, balancing minority and majority rights. Minority rights have been restricted, and I think we know this. And then it gets into the whole separate but equal thing. Remember, this comes from Plessy versus Ferguson. Plessy versus Ferguson was the decision in 1890 something that created that whole policy where it was okay, supposedly, to have separate facilities as long as they were equal. Alrighty, it wasn't a violation of any kind of amendment. And so that's really the only one they get into in the College Board stuff. Finally, 5.13, affirmative action. What is it? Remember, affirmative action is this policy that the government created back in the 1960s, 1970s, to try and give this groups that have been discriminated against more of a fair shot in the workplace and in college admissions. We apply it pretty much to college admissions for us in our class today. And so you've got three court cases there. University of California versus Bach. Remember, Bach was the Vietnam War person. He'd come back from war. He'd been in a medical unit in the war and came back and was wanting to go to medical school. He got denied twice. He found out somehow that his scores were better than several of the candidates, and that the University of California had set aside 20 spots for minority candidates, and his test scores were better than those candidates. And so it goes to the court. Court rules two things. First off, affirmative action is okay. So they say, yes, this is constitutional. Second thing they write is that you shouldn't use quotas when it comes to admission. So there should not be a block for this group, a block for this group, a block of spots for this group, is what they say. Gratz versus Bollinger, and I messed up there. It should be So it should be Gratz and then Grutter versus Bollinger. So sorry about that. Gratz was the undergrad. This was where the University of Michigan, and they're both University of Michigan. That's why it's Bollinger for both of them. Michigan at the time, 2003, they used a point system. And so you got points for your SAT scores, for your GPA, and all that stuff. And minority candidates got an automatic 20 points for just nothing, really. They just got the points. And so Gratz is going to question that. And the Supreme Court is going to rule against the point system, basically, and say, yeah, you shouldn't, once again, race should not be the deciding factor, or it can be a factor. It can be used, but it should not be the deciding factor. And then Grutter versus Bollinger, this was the University of Michigan Law School. They were trying to diversify their program. Grutter did not get in, and she's going to appeal to the Supreme Court. The court's going to side with the University of Michigan, once again, saying that, you know, race should not be a deciding factor, but it can be a factor, and it was okay what the University of Michigan was doing here. Okay. All right. There is the review. So we will take the test different periods. We'll take it different days, and we'll do your written final on the same day. All right, guys. Hope you've had a great weekend, and I'll see you as we start our block schedule on Monday, the 22nd. Take care. Bye-bye.